This is Louis Pope's house. It's April 2nd, 2024. And we're going to talk about Louis. We're going to start with, where did you grow up?
Okay. I'll go farther back. My family just did a little deal with, on my father's side, my brother's daughter, my niece, looked up a bunch of stuff. My family came to Cochise County in 1884. Mm-hmm. My dad's grandfather, he hauled stuff in wagons. He was there for a long time, and then he went back to Missouri. And then when he came back out here, and his family, the trains and stuff were here by then. Mm-hmm. That was my grandmother's side. My father's side of the family came from Rome, Georgia. They had a huge plantation there. It's still there with the graveyard. We now have pictures and everything of it. Well, he came out here and became a railroad engineer.
Okay.
That's where he met my grandmother, because her family had gone from freighters to the railroad.
Mm-hmm.
So my grandfather, that's where it all got together. And so, and then I was born and raised in, my mom's family came from Finland.
Mm.
And my grandfather homesteaded at McNeil. He walked 25 miles to Bisbee. And worked underground in the mines in Bisbee. And it wasn't for Phelps Dodge. And he had this homestead. My grandmother wasn't here yet, so he dug a dugout. And my grandmother came...
Excuse me, a dugout is something you live in until you build?
Right.
Okay.
And see, he went through the regular way, through the island there, to come in. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't let him in. So he went to Canada. Changed his name and got into the United States.
Because he came in a different way?
He went to Canada first, changed his name, and they got in. So he homesteaded. Then my grandmother and one aunt came from Finland. And she crossed the country, she and her daughter, in a train, and he picked her up. And they worked there and built that deal up. As the other nesters moved out, they bought land around there, and they had a pretty good little start.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest things that my mother and everybody talk about, they dug the first well, 300 feet.
And they're digging it by hand?
They dug it by hand.
How in the heck could you do that?
He was a miner. He'd steal the dynamite.
Oh, sure.
He'd bring the dynamite home, and they blasted, and it took them several years, but...
And then you have a bucket going down.
Exactly. That's where we started. And then my...
So this is the late 1800s.
No, yeah, that's when they came in.
Yeah, yeah.
But mm-hmm. that's on my dad's side,
mm-hmm.
not on my mom's side. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly when they came in. Mm-hmm. But anyway, to make a long story short, that then my dad was born and raised in Douglas. My mom was born and raised in Douglas. My dad went to World War II. He was a prop specialist on B-24s. He was in the Pacific. Mm-hmm. All my mom's family, she has two brothers and two sisters. One sister went to Hawaii. She was already married to a dentist,
mm-hmm.
but when the war started.
Mm-hmm.
Her two brothers, one of them went into the Air Force and flew as a navigator his 50 flights. And my other uncle was a forward observer for General Patton.
Wow. Wow.
in World War II and Korea.
Wow.
So anyway, that's how we got here. My dad's family parents died when he was in junior in high school. And he was out on his own pretty much.
And he's in Douglas.
It's all in Douglas.
And you were born what year?
1948.
Okay.
I was born the first of three sons. My brother Ralph is 3 years younger than me. My brother Don was 4 years younger, and he's dead. He died.
What was Douglas like? What do you remember of Douglas as a kid growing up?
Douglas was a wonderful town. We had American Airlines flew in there. We had the Sunset Limited train stop there twice a day. They had Phelps Dodge had, you know, owned pretty much everything. Uh-huh. It was just a wonderful town. We had a wonderful high school. We had a great education program. Yeah. We had a heck of a football team. Bisbee and Douglas were the oldest rival in the nation. Uh-huh. And that's pretty much, Douglas was great. And what's happened to that town now, that we could talk another 100 years.
Yeah, that's a different topic, but it was a thriving town.
It was a clean, nice town. And it was, it wasn't just for the Phelps Dodge mines. The Western United States, office center was in Douglas, Arizona.
I don't know what that is.
Okay.
Don't understand.
All the big shots for Phelps Dodge Corporation in the Western United States lived in Douglas.
Okay.
And there's a whole part between the smelter and the town itself.
Right.
Where their offices, and if you go down 10th Street, all those great big huge houses, they were all built by PD for their. Douglas was a whale of a town. And at the end, before it fell apart, poor PD, we had Babe Ruth World Series was there. The Arizona Championship High School Rodeo was done there. I mean, that was one of the best towns you could ever grow up in.
Wow.
Bisbee Douglas, the very first airport, international airport in the United States, was in Douglas.
Huh. Huh.
The runway went into Mexico.
Huh.
In fact, my mom had pictures of Amelia Earhart flying in there. There is so much history in Douglas, it's just unbelievable.
And I don't think many people know. But what was it like being a border town back then as a kid? Do you have any memories of...
Border, what border?
Mexico border.
There wasn't no border.
What do you mean?
We run back and forth. The wood haulers would bring their... would bring the... The
firewood
in on the burros, they turn them loose over by the cemetery. We go get them.
Yeah, so didn't know where the border, or you sort of knew.
Well, there was a fence there, but it was down.
Yeah.
We went back, even in high school, they had real nice places to eat. At the junior-senior prom in Douglas, all the seniors took their dates to Mexico to have dinner. The parents knew it. It wasn't.
Yeah, it was not.
It was not a big deal. It was not.
Yeah. And so were workers coming and going from Mexico, working on ranches, I assume?
Yes, but we had an awful lot of illegal. There's a building still here where the illegals worked.
Hmm.
There were lots of illegal. In fact, most of the ranch hands here were illegals.
That's what I thought. And say there was a building here, what do you mean?
It's still there. We call it
here
the...
Here on your property?
Well, on this property. Okay, it was called... I won't tell you what it was. It was called a wetback shack. That's what they called them all, were wetbacks. And it was a wetback shack.
Yeah. Yeah.
And those people, when we first moved in here and at the ranch, they had both one legal guy and a bunch of illegals that worked there forever. Mm-hmm. And these illegals were the salt of the earth. We used to go to town and leave our two kids, my daughter and my son, here with men that were, and they took care of them.
You wouldn't think
it's all changed.
What was the distinction between, if there was no sort of real defined border?
There was a fence there.
But why would they be illegals? You said there were one legal and a bunch of illegals. I don't understand.
Because if they caught them, they had to have papers or a green card or something. If they didn't, and this is the way it worked, it was not illegal to work illegals.
That's what I thought.
Ted Troller and I cut wood together.
Yeah, the ranchers did.
And this was in the 70s, and the laws hadn't been passed. If they caught the illegals, if you were working them, you weren't in trouble.
Yeah.
You had to pay them and feed them. before they took them. That's the way it was.
Yeah, it was all positive back
then. It was. And these illegals were some of the salt of the earth people.
Okay, I'm going to stop us there on that.
Okay.
And get back to your high school student. Any other memories you want to add about high school or what happens next after you graduate high school?
I worked. My brothers and I worked. I had my own business by the time I was 12.
What did you do?
I mowed lawns and took care of people's houses when they left.
Yeah.
We cut wood. My dad and I, we cut and sold firewood. And just everything. My dad was a mechanic, a very, very well-known mechanic, we built a shop in our backyard. We built it ourselves, and he worked on just friends' cars and stuff. So I was either in the grease cutting wood or mowing lawns growing up.
Yeah.
And then when I got a little bit older and started dating Susan, even before that, we were working on ranches and stuff, building fences, just anything we could get.
Yeah.
And then when I started dating Susan,
When was that? How old were you when you guys started dating?
Junior in high school. But see, Susan and I were friends from the time we were 5 years old. We have been friends all that time since we were five.
Wow.
And then in high school, it got kind of serious. And we got married in, what year did we get married? 71, right? 70.
70. You're in trouble.
Yeah. And then.
Just as long as he remembers the day.
And then we had a daughter named Kathy, and she married a local kid here, and they worked on the 99 Bar Ranch over on the other side of the mountain, and they all went to, now they're in Oklahoma, and they've got their own ranch.
Okay, I'm going to take you back to. You're a junior high, Susan and you are friends, you're in high school, you're 12, you're working. Other memories of high school, or what do you do after high school, either?
Well, I mean, high school was, it was just high school, and I mean, we were friends. I went to the ranch with her a lot and helped her dad, I mean, just to be with her and stuff like that. And then I graduated from high school, and she graduated from high school when we both went to Cochise College. We were the third class to graduate from there.
And where was that in Douglas?
The very first campus where it's sitting there now.
Okay.
We were the third class, and then when we graduated out of there, we both went to Northern Arizona University, and Susan got her teaching certificate, and I got my degree's in recreation land management, and it's out of the. It's actually a Park Service degree, and because I was going to go to forestry, and I got all they talked about was cutting down trees, and I needed something else, and that was a math science, pretty hardcore physics and all that other stuff, and.
Was it sponsored by the Park Service?
Park Service set it up at NAU, and it was out of the School of Biological Sciences.
Yeah, that's Flagstaff.
Flagstaff, yes.
Yeah. And what was it about recreation? What was your interest in recreation?
Because you'd always have a job. I could see down the road the people in the United States were going to take it over. There ain't no timber anymore. It's gone.
Right.
And the ranches are almost gone.
So you saw that as
I saw that, and that's why I did it. I could have been the vice president of all of the Park Service if I wanted to, but I never had to worry about a job.
Mm. In fact, that's neat.
I mean, that's why I did it. And then when we got through there.
Let me see if we can figure out about when that was. You would have been 17 or 18 or 19. What year would that have been? In the late 60s you were at?
Well, graduated from high school in 66.
Okay.
And we went to Cochise College then. We went 2 years there.
Okay.
And Susan graduated a year ahead in 70.
Okay.
I graduated there in 71 because that was a hard deal. I had to take at Northern Arizona.
71.
Okay. Yeah, and see, like I told you, the day I took my final exams, I got my draft notice to go to Vietnam. And I went to Phoenix. I passed my physical. I had two seasons with the helicopter fighting fire here. Okay. And I knew if I went to Vietnam, see, I worked it during the, in high school, I worked 2 years for Arizona State Highway Department on a survey crew 1 year and as a, on a road crew the next year. The next year I went in, that would be 66, 67 with the Arizona State Highway Department.
Yeah.
And in 66, in 68, I went to work for the Forest Service in Rucker Canyon.
Okay, 1968, you get a job with the Forest Service.
As a seasonal.
As a seasonal, and you're like 16?
No, I was 18.
18, I was going to say you have to be.
No, I was 18, I was 20, because I was 18, okay. It was 20. I worked 2 years.
Okay, so I want you, because that's your first experience in the Forest Service, and you're in Rucker Canyon.
No, I was fighting fire in 64.
Okay, then I want you to back up to
64. Okay, I'm going, that's where I'm going, but I wasn't. Because in those days, when we had a fire, they come and got everybody from the ranches. I went to my first fire in 1964.
And how old are you?
16. I wasn't old enough to get paid.
Yeah.
So they paid Susan's dad. And I spent the night there with him. And then the next year, I went to another fire. I was 17.
Okay, so what they come, they need locals, young guys to help out. What were you actually doing?
Fighting the fire.
Okay, well, tell me more about it.
Well, what we did, we went to the fire, and the ranchers would bring 55-gallon drums full of water, shovels, and that, and we'd soak, this was a grass fire.
Yeah, okay, not a forest fire, right, yeah.
So they would soak burlap bags in there, and you go down through there with one in each hand and you swat that fire with it. And we worked all night on that fire, and the next day I had to go back to school, so we went back, the fire was over, and then the next summer they had a timber fire.
And were you called for that one?
No, Susan's dad called me, said, you want to go to another fire? Because I made a lot of money, because that's the deal. You make lots of money in fire. I don't care where you're at. Yeah. That's the problem today. But anyway, so that fire was at Rucker Canyon, and I went there with her dad, and we worked, fought fire. We were digging fire line, and they brought some caterpillars in.
Okay.
And the guys that were running the caterpillars were real good friends of Susan's dad. And I knew that country. I'd walked through it. I'd been horseback through it. So they asked me if I'd like to stay. And I said, sure. So they gave me a flashlight and some ribbon. And I marked the trail for those caterpillars could get through. I worked all night that night.
And how old are you again here?
I think I was 17.
And how did you know that area so well? Because you're in Douglas.
Because I grew up, my dad, we went hunting and I was working on the ranches. My dad was, I had already walked all the trails from Rustler Park. I had already walked from Rustler Park to Monta Vista and Sentinel Lookout by the time I was 14.
And you were just doing it for fun.
My neighbors had a cabin up there, and we'd go up there every year.
At Rustler?
At Rustler Park. It's still there. It's the cabin that has the crystals in it.
Yeah.
And we stayed in there, and my dad took us, and we walked these trails. And then every weekend, my dad took us, if it wasn't Saturday, it was Sunday, and we were walking somewhere. And then when I started at the ranch, I was going horseback and all this other stuff. And I can truthfully say I've been on every peak and every canyon in the Chiricahua and the Peninsula and the Dragoon Mountains in my life.
Probably the only person that can say that, I would think.
No, Ralph Velasco down at Douglas, he has to. He's older than I am. He's 10 years older than I am.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to take you back to, now I know why they asked you during the fire at Rucker when you were 17 to flag it, because you had spent all this time there. So tell me more about what you did during that fire.
We just, I walked ahead, and I'd walk ahead and put flags up, and then come back, and we just worked back and forth, because they had to, when I first got started, one of the, they had a guy that stayed with the cat on the, on foot, and he would come up to me and kind of check me out, kind of show me what they were looking for before he just turned me loose. So we were, the two, he was the guy that's supposed to be doing it.
Right.
And I was his aide, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
And we, you can.
He didn't know the area.
You can still see that fire land underneath, from the pass between Rucker Canyon and Tex Canyon. If you look up at Sunset, or above Sunset Peak, there's another peak up there. It's, if you look, you can still see that fire line. We took it all the way
and
to there.
And that would have been, okay, you're 17, so I've been 65.
Yep, it was six.
From 65 to now, almost 60 years.
Yeah, I know.
How long did you work that fire?
I was on it 2 days.
Okay.
Because I had to go back to school. It was on the week. I went on a Friday after school, and I think
on
I
weekend.
Came back on a Sunday.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly, but I wasn't there too long.
Yeah.
They wanted me to stay.
Yeah. And so that was your first two experiences with the Forest Service.
Right.
And
lots of money, man. Okay. We were rich.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. So, and you graduated from Northern Arizona and recreation. You went off to war for 2 years.
No, I did not go to war.
You did not. Okay.
That's the rest of the story.
Okay, take me from there.
Okay. Susan taught school in Flagstaff while because I took me an extra year. Mm-hmm. So when I graduated, that's when I got my draft notice.
Right, and so, you passed your physical.
Right, and we came back to Portal, and we lived in the little house that's right below the ranger station. It was the CCC truck. It was the truck garage. Right next to it was...
They call it the bunkhouse.
But then they had the telephone operator lived there for a long time. That's where the telephone system came. That's a whole nother story.
Yeah, I was gonna say, how did you end up renting or getting into that house?
Because they offered me the job as the helitack foreman. See, I worked 2 summers between the time we were talking. I went to work the next summer in 68, 68, 69, 70, and 71 I was doing
seasonal, well, we got
it was a seasonal job.
Okay, so let's go back. So your first year that you worked seasonal for the Forest Service, where were you, what did you do?
I was in Rucker Canyon.
Okay.
I cleaned campgrounds.
Yeah, because they're...
They were building some of the campgrounds. We had a crew of juvenile delinquents that were helping. Mm-hmm. So I helped on that. Mm-hmm. I went to the fires because
I was... So you were stationed in Rucker.
I was stationed there, but I had the helitack training, and I was on that. I was the only one on that side of the mountain that had the helicopter training. Plus, we cleaned campgrounds. We did everything that needed to be done. We helped on some range inspections. We marked timber. We did everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
The helitack crew used to be, they started with helicopters so you could make initial attack on fires. And so the basic thing is they would get you to the fire quick. And we learned we had suits that we were, like that the smoke jumpers wear, that we were supposed to wear to jump out. Well, we left them at home, and we jumped into if you could get me into a juniper tree that I could hit on the side, I could go for about, the farthest I ever jumped was probably 13 feet. But usually he could put a skid on a rock, and we could get out. I got pictures of that. And that's what we did. We made the initial attack on the fires.
Okay, so you get flown in. That's what a okay.
Plus, as soon as they could move us off, then one guy would stay on that. We'd cut a hell spot. First thing we did, cut a hell spot so they could land.
Right. Yep.
And then we would get the fire contained because of the 10 a.m. policy.
Oh, what's that?
Okay, it used to be the Forest Service, you had to have your fire contained by 10 o'clock the next morning, or you had to sit down and ask why.
Wow.
That's the way it was. So we went and
what if you had a big fire? I mean,
there weren't no big fires. Because we got there. We had a lookout at Sentinel. We had a lookout at Monta Vista. We had a lookout at Fly Peak. We had a lookout at Silver Peak. We had a lookout at the monument.
Yeah.
We had a fire crew at each lookout had smoke chasers. We had a fire crew.
What's a smoke chaser?
It's a guy that lives with the lookout. He works trails when he's not, but if there's a fire, he chases it on foot. Foot or horseback, because there used to be corrals, and a lot of the ranch kids would bring their horses and they'd use them.
So if I get it right, a smoke chaser goes out to...
He lives with the lookout.
Right, to get a better location and description of the fire once there is one.
And he starts fighting the fire until he gets help. And then.
So your thing is, fires never got very big because you have all these people looking. You have a guy that's on the ground pretty.
And we had a fire crew at Sentinel. We had one at Rustler Park. We had one at Turkey Creek. We had one at Rucker. That's what I was doing at Rucker.
Okay, and how big's a fire crew then?
It just depends. There were two of us in Rucker.
Okay.
And I think there was five at Sentinel for a while.
And I'm assuming when they're not working on fires, they're doing maintenance, trail maintenance, whatever needs to be done.
Exactly. Okay. You got it. That's how we did it, right there.
Okay.
And so that's what happened. And then, so I had been on the crew, and that's why I went, actually, that helped me go to college. Because Vietnam was going on, and I had two seasons of helicopter time, and I knew if I did get drafted, that I was going to be a door gunner.
Yeah.
So I tried to go to flight school.
Yeah.
I couldn't get in without a college degree, so I went to college. Mm-hmm. So when I got out of college. And I passed my physical, and I came back, and I was going to be drafted. The district ranger here was, and my dad were real good friends.
What was his name?
Dick Albert.
Okay.
I think he may still be alive. I'm not sure.
But anyway, I
went to work. The Helitech foreman, the guy that's in charge of all that, and it's, I mean, you do the books, and you do all this. It's more than just a job, you know. He took a job at Nogales, and Dick Albert asked me, would you want this job? And I said, yeah, but I'm going to get drafted. He said, do you want this job? And I said, yeah.
And just to be clear, what was the job?
The helitech foreman, the guy in charge of the helicopter operation.
Okay.
And the fire management officer lived at Portal.
Okay.
Most of the fire stuff was centered in Portal in those days.
Okay.
So anyway, so we started there. I went to, so I told him I can't do it. And he said, no. So he went and talked to my dad. And they both come and talk to me and said, you're going to take the job because you're not going to get drafted. I said, I'm going to get drafted.
So you were kind of turning down the job.
I was turning down the job. I was there to make a little money because Susan had already, she was going to go back to Flagstaff and work. She was still a teacher there. So that's where we were at. So they were right. I took the job, and about 2 weeks in, they canceled the draft.
Oh, I see.
So there I was, and I had a college degree and everything else, and so I stayed there and ran the helicopter program.
Where were you based out of?
Portal.
Okay, so that's how you got to Portal, and you were living in the what they now call the bunkhouse.
I lived at Rucker first, and then we
moved around.
Helped each other. I mean,
yeah.
It wasn't this.
But your first full time job, you're living in Portal at that.
Actually, it wasn't even a full time job. It was an accepted conditional.
Yeah. So you were like 9 months.
Nine months, but they made me take an extra month off
during
the winter so I could get the overtime in the summer. So anyway, during the winter months, the price of furs went crazy. So I started a wood business, starting cutting wood, working on all the ranches, especially the Krentz Ranch, because that's where I worked there a lot. But the price of furs went through the roof. A bobcat fur would bring you $300. A fox fur would bring you $40 to $50. A coyote would bring anything from $5 to $100. So I got a bunch of traps, and I trapped the crud out of things. And
where did you do your trap?
I trapped from the Paradise, Foothills Road, at the Red Top Ranch, all the way to almost Apache.
Oh, my God, that's a long way.
Yeah, every day. He had to check them every day. Plus, I had some hounds. A guy at Flagstaff gave me a hound dog, and I had two hounds, and I started hunting lions. And these dogs would trail these bobcats. If I hung a bobcat on a drag, those dogs would trail that cat up. And I don't
understand what that means.
Some of these traps, if you tie, especially a coyote, if you tie them to a bush, they'll sit there and they'll chew their foot off or pull off. Yeah, they'll pull a toe off. You put a lot of them on drags, and you have to follow the drags. So I could put those hounds on there, and they go right to it. And then I started hunting lions a little bit after that.
And what was that like? I mean, I don't know.
It was just a hobby mainly, but I only had a couple dogs, we did that, and
this is in the winter time you're doing this, right? Because you're off from okay.
And that's how we and then Susan dropped her. Her teaching, and she stayed here. We had a daughter. Kathy was born over there, and Ed was born over there too.
At Portal.
Because
you're living in the Forest Service.
Right, and then we moved here in '76.
Okay.
Into this house.
So when you're living in Portal, can you give me any memories of what Portal was like in those days? Who was around? What was happening there? I don't know. Give me a description.
I can give you one thing about Portal that I'm really proud of. Portal was a town full of very important people. Very, very important people. And we wanted, with a degree in recreation and seeing what Portal was all about, I was kind of pushing a little bit to get a little visitor center started there, because we used to have a lot of people.
What were they coming for? Recreation?
Bird, for everything. On Easter weekend, you could not find a place to park.
It's the same because way now.
Because of the Hispanics that came. Anyway, so that's what I did. We got that program going.
What program?
A visitor center.
Okay.
I had Dr. Gertz. He was the world's leading arachnologist. He lived at Portal. He was one of my volunteers. I have the Assistant Secretary of Interior, the Cutlers, work for me as volunteers. Dr. Spofford and his wife, they work for me. We put that all together, free, nothing. It didn't cost them nothing. We just did it.
Wow, and that is a great story.
And then we got down the road, and Barney Tomberlin moved in there. Mm-hmm. Barney wanted to talk to me. He was a snake guy. Mm-hmm. And he was talking to me. He said, we could put a display. I said, I'll do my end if you'll do yours. So, boy, I went and fought him and got the Forest Service to buy the display cases and stuff.
Yeah.
And then I also talked him into buying the feed for the rattlesnakes. For all the snakes we had. We even had Gila Monster in there.
Nice.
And that got us off and started.
And do you think some of it was the fact that these important people were here, was it because of the research station partly, is what I assume?
Right.
The Southwest Research.
Research station, plus a lot of them did some of their research and stuff here.
Right.
I'll tell you a story.
Yeah.
Dr. Spofford, they had the Christmas bird count. They had it every year. Well, I was cutting wood, And I brought a load of wood to his house during the, and we were talking. I unloaded the wood and we were talking and about birds and all that other stuff. I said, well, I saw a bunch of canvasbacks on the tank. He said, you didn't see canvasbacks. After I got through unloading the wood, I reached behind the seat of my pickup and pulled out a drake canvasback and showed him. And he said, oh my gosh. So Dr. Spofford and I counted all the waterfowl here forever. I'm the only guy.
Because that would you go knew where they were.
Yeah, I go shoot the birds and all this other stuff everywhere because we ate the canvasbacks because sure. We needed the food.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was trapping and I was taking care of all the bird watchers and everything else. I never have been, you know, I'm a bird watcher, everything. And then the other thing that happened to me was when I was in college, psychology, sociology, all this crap. The professor that taught archaeology lived across the street from me. He taught it at NAU, mm-hmm. At Cochise College. So I took a big slug of archaeology. Anything I could sacrifice, psychology, sociology, I did archaeology. And I really got into the Native peoples of the Southwest.
Why do you think that was? Had you seen?
Because I liked to hunt arrowheads when I was a kid.
Yeah, that's what I was.
Plus, my family has one of the original C.S. Fly books on Geronimo and stuff that was published in Tombstone and stuff like that. C.S. Fly was one of the most. He was one of the biggest photographers in the Southwest, especially of the Geronimo and those people there.
Yeah. How did they end up naming Fly Peak? Is it after?
No, I think Fly was related to them.
Okay. But
yeah. As far as I know, I couldn't tell you much more, but what the rumors I've heard, they were relatives of them.
So I'm gonna you're in Portal and it sounds like a hopping place, exciting to be there. You're a young guy, sort of newly married. What a great life it sounds like you had there.
We worked all the time.
But you enjoyed it, I asked.
I enjoyed it.
And you got I just think what a great time.
And then I decided I got an opportunity. I couldn't use my education because all the vets that were coming back from Vietnam had a preference.
Yeah.
Well, there's a job came open in Douglas as a recreation sub staff kind of deal. And I went in there and I worked, used my education for 6 years. I drove back and forth.
Wait a minute. So just why did you want to make the change from the job you were doing and you're living in Portal to this recreation one?
Because I was looking for a retirement system and I was looking for the money. And
it was full time.
It was full time GS. It was a GS7 job.
Yeah.
And I was a GS5-6 when I was running that.
Seasonal, long season.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And so I went in there. I went into there and worked in the office for 6 years. After about 5 years, all we did was planning. It was during that era of planning. That's all we did. It was just a waste of time.
Yeah.
And I can tell you a story. I was the only one on the Coronado National Forest that had a degree in any kind of recreation. There was no one else. But so they had a huge meeting in the Grand Canyon, a week-long meeting. So I got on the bus in Flagstaff with my boss, and we went all the way to the Grand Canyon, and he tried to talk me into giving a talk. And I said, no, you're the boss. They can listen to me. So as I was going up there, I wrote up a whole bunch of notes, and he gave me the talk, and I got to spin around with these guys and talk. It was a real deal for me, and it was a real deal for them because it opened their eyes on a lot of the stuff that's happening.
The Forest Service, and I'm asking you to tell me if I'm right or wrong or more about it, was really doing a lot of planning. I forget the name of it, but it had to do
land with management planning,
recreation primarily. I mean, they were
well. That's the Park Service. It's all recreation.
Yeah, Yeah.
It's not multiple use.
So when you first started your full-time job, what kind of work were you doing before it got to be all just planning?
I inherited all the timber. I put together all the timber sales and all that. I did all the special uses, that summer homes, electric sites, anything. I did recreation, a lot of, I had a boss. I was sub-staff. I wasn't staff. But guess, you know how it works. I did all the work. And anyway, but we put together a pretty good recreation program here. Mm-hmm. And
recreation, some of it had to do with the campgrounds, right?
Yeah, it was dispersed and developed and wilderness. And wilderness. We handled all the wilderness and trails. We were in charge of all of that.
Were you around? You would have been around when they established the wilderness boundaries, right?
Yes, it was 18,000 acres, and it was not a, I'm trying to think of the terminology.
There was a designation before it became a wilderness right. area that was short of
it was a. It wasn't a research natural area, but it was designated, and it was 18,000 acres.
Okay.
And that, then it, when it became wilderness, official wilderness,
yeah.
then.
Yeah. But you were working for the Forest Service.
When that happened, yes.
Did you have any part in the...
The overhead stuff?
No, the figuring out that this is a wilderness area and why it meets the criteria and all that? No,
that was already pretty much dictated to us.
Okay.
It was kind of a political thing, and it may have been a good thing, may have been a bad thing. But anyway, anyway, that's...
Did you have any work that... Part of your job had to do with the wilderness area because of the boundary, like putting up signs?
We did all the sign work, usually with the fire crews. Because once fire season ended here, our district ranger was really good.
Who was the district
ranger? Dick Albert. And okay. He kept these guys on.
Yeah.
And everybody, myself included, everybody, when I was even starting out, that's, we kept these guys. And the thing with the Forest Service, they have the Range Betterment Fund, and they have the Knudsen-Vanderbilt Act.
Oh, what the
And both of those are, the. That's another reason why I work with the Forest Service, because 25% of all the receipts from the Forest Service in range management, grazing fees or any of that, 25% of that money comes back to the counties where it was collected. 25% came back to the forest for timber stand improvement or whatever. And the big thing about it is that was carryover money, where you could carry that money over from year to year.
Normally, having worked for the Park Service, your budgeted money, you use it up or that's it.
Yeah.
So we could actually do some pretty significant
deals.
Yeah, because you have money and you could build it up over time.
Yeah. See,
I often thought, why don't they do that in the parks or anyway?
Well, they've done it well. There's no timber anymore.
Yeah.
Anyway. I mean, but they shot themselves in the foot, but that's neither here nor there.
Right.
But the deal is, so I did a lot of putting together some of the projects and finding the project, putting them together, talking with people, and it was mostly in the timber part. Erosion control, all that kind of stuff. The range guys, range is king on the Coronado, and so we had range special, a range tech, and I never worked, and I couldn't anyway because I was married, and our family owns one of the biggest ranches on the district, so I couldn't work in range. Yeah. So anyway,
yeah.
That's what happened there, and I stayed into that.
Tell me about trails and what you had to do with trails on the Coronado.
Well, one of the biggest things we did, we got it. We started trying to get a log of them. So every time we had a chance, somebody pushed a wheel down every one of those trails.
A log on them, meaning know the distance.
The distance. And yeah. Then we would map it and try to put on the map where the because not all those maps were accurate. The old map. So we started mapping and doing all that.
The trails existed at this time, but there wasn't a lot of information.
Yeah, there was over 350 system trails on the Chiricahua Mountains when I took it over.
Okay. That's wonderful to know that.
And see, we worked at it. And
Who built those original trails?
The CCC's built an awful lot of them.
That's what I was thinking.
A lot of them.
And then I'm assuming some of them are built to access fire lookouts.
Exactly.
And who, and when were those fire lookouts put in?
Do you know? Man, they were back probably. I should know because I tore them down.
I know that, but look, give me a ballpark.
They were probably in the teens, okay. And 20s.
Yeah, I mean, that gives us some. And so they built them in. They probably went in with horses.
Horses and mules. We used to have, I mean, the Douglas Ranger District, we had 16 horses and mules at Portal.
And those were to resupply and supply the...
Right, cows. And at Rustler Park, those animals would go up there in the summertime. We had a mule with a bell on her, and we had the corrals, and we had we all knew how to pack,
yeah.
But they always hired a packer off of one of the ranches. It was a packer, but anytime he wasn't there, we all knew how to pack. We could pack a mule, and in fact, I wound up the last 3 years I was at Portal, I shod every one of those animals. So anyway, it was one of those things you just worked your butt off.
Yeah, and you knew.
But you had to love it. You had to love it.
Yeah.
It wasn't a job. It was a life.
It was a lifestyle.
Yeah.
That's the way the old park rangers were. It was a lifestyle. Exactly. You lived in there. You did everything you needed to do. So there's the lookouts, the trails are in the 30s when the CCC came in. I know they did a lot of conservation work. They built buildings. And they must have done some trail work.
A lot of trail work.
Okay.
A lot of trail work.
Okay.
I had an uncle. My mother's brother-in-law was on the CCC's he worked out of the monument.
Uh-huh.
And I know a lot of other men that worked around here that were on these crews. There was a huge camp at Portal.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And a bigger one at Rucker. There was a huge one.
I didn't know that.
It was huge.
So there was I knew of the one in Portal, and I've seen pictures of that. And then there was one at the Monument in Rucker. Those were the three camps.
Three main ones.
Yeah.
And then they had one over here by going to Animas. There was the ones I know of, but yeah.